This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
This is Radioactive Magazine, and I am Amy Bell. I'm here today with State Representative Brandon Ellington and Miss E. They're here to talk to us about the organization Voices of the People. Welcome to the program today.
Hi.
How you doing today?
Now, can you just tell us a little bit about what Voices of the People is and what you do?
Yeah, Voices of the People was founded in 1999, and it was founded around the plea, political, legal, economic, and academic. So Voices of the People is consistently engaging the community around conscience, raising events. We also have free political and legal classes.
What does a political and legal class, what does that entail?
With the political classes, I typically teach those when I'm here in town, so in the summertime and in the fall time. And we have three different courses: comparative politics, political theory, and then state and federal government. That way people can understand the different levels of government. The legal classes this year are actually being taught by the Missouri Bar Association, and the Black Caucus got behind it, but this is something that originated with Voices of the People.
And what can people expect to learn at a class like this? What's the purpose, and how is it improving the community?
Well, in the political classes, you can expect to learn everything from comparative politics, which compares different countries and the way their political process is actually implemented. In the political theory class, you have basic political theory. So you have the beginning course where you start to understand political words, political ideologies, the different levels in the arena. With the legal classes, you can expect to get taught by judges and lawyers about the legal process, from everything from constitutional law to criminal law.
And how does somebody find out about how to participate in one of these classes?
Well, the legal classes right now is the second Tuesday of every month, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Mary Kelly Center. We have radio ads that's being currently played right now. You can also find it out by contacting Voices of the People. Area code 816-651-0044. You can also go to the website voicesofthepeople.org, and you can go on Facebook to Voices of the People on Facebook.
And when you started this program, was there a specific community need that you were looking to address with this education program?
Well, the education program grew out of some of the conscious raising activities that we was trying to do with Voices of the People. When Voices of the People was first founded, it was founded around a lot of different issues that was happening in the community, some of which was police brutality. So the legal courses and the political courses came once we started understanding that a lot of people in poorer communities didn't understand their legal rights, nor did they understand the political arena and what agency or what institution they should be engaged in to get different results and different changes in their community.
So there was police brutality in Kansas City?
Yeah, I know it sounds like an anomaly, but that's how we actually started. And from there, we've been able to grow by identifying and addressing different issues that are happening in the city, like with GYRL, which came out of Voices of the People. She started doing domestic violence forums, and from the forums, she started doing various trainings when it comes to domestic violence, counseling, counselors, and also people that have been victims.
But when we speak of GYRL, we're speaking of giving yourself real love. And that was one of the organizations that was formed out of Voices of the People, because we realized that once the mothers was taken out of the homes for whatever reason, that the basis of our community was suffering in the urban core. So out of that came My Brother's Keeper, which formulated the men being back into the homes. And that generated us learning that there was a desert of food, an empty desert of food where food wasn't.
A food desert, yeah.
Right. And so food wasn't amplified. So then we had built a community garden, which was able to feed our people in our community that normally wouldn't get any fresh vegetables. So it's grown to be a whole list of things that Voices of the People have come under.
And are you starting to see improvements in the community just around things like having fresh produce and having good family support for women in particular with GYRL.
But we're seeing that it's a slow process because once the system has beaten you down, it's a recovery process. We've been very thankful with men that have left our community that's come back from being incarcerated through my brother's keeper to be able to start being the fathers that they needed to be in their homes, which helps a lot. But that's through Representative Ellington's efforts to go back into the community and pull people out to make them see that they are worthwhile and they can make a difference by running for political office. It's something that we never really believed in before, that the system could be changed politically.
How long have you been a representative for?
I was first elected in 2011 during a special election, and I've been representing ever since then.
And was your political career a result of your work with Voices of the People?
Yeah, it was a direct result of my work in the community. Like I said, we started Voices of the People in 1999. And the first issue was police brutality, but there's so many issues that is affecting the community that by me working in the community, working with Voices of the People and identifying different issues, it made me want to get more involved in the political process because everything breaks down to policies and procedures.
And I think one of the things when we talk about Voices of the People coming, when we speak about voices, it involves the whole community. It has from the gay rights to the civil rights. And that's what makes us unique, because it's not looking at one gender of people. It's not saying black people have been discriminated against. It's saying we, the people, have been discriminated. So out of that, our political entity has been changed to start a party by Representative Ellington called We the People. And that involves the people getting involved in local and state and government, which makes a big difference, because now the upcoming election is one of the results of that. We have 4 or 5 young people that decided that they want to run for city council, which is unique because we've been told that it takes money, but it takes we the people to get out there to engage the people.
Walking and knocking and getting your word out there. And just having the courage to run once, do you see that people maybe have the courage to run again? Mm-hmm. I mean, having a support group really helps on stuff like that.
It helps a lot, especially when you take the dogmatic part out of the political arena, especially in Kansas City, when the politics in the urban core has been run by a specific a group that has been, you know, not doing us just. And now you see people are tired, and they're coming together, and they're saying they're going across parties, and they're saying we want the best elected people involved in our government, which means that you just go there to represent us and not dictate to us.
And that has been what you've seen in the past from your government, is not speaking with the voice of the people.
The people giving up their rights. It's not the government took them, it's we sat back and we let it happen. You know, we got focused on different items. If, you know, if we start looking around city, local city government, we see how the city government has not been in our favor for the working class people, especially for the women and minorities. We have suffered under this government, you know, so it takes us to stand up and say, people like you, Amy, that we have to support the voice, and we have to make sure that the money is not running, the big government is not running the local politics. So you have to get involved to find out how easy you can run. Representative Ellington was one of the candidates that they said could not run because he didn't have any major forces behind him. But he had the people, the will of the people, and we knocked on doors, you know, went to neighborhoods and got people involved in the process. And I think that's why he's so successful, is because he went down there with the heart of the people and continued to push their efforts. You know, what he's seen in his community, he went and spoke about it. And so he's engaged in the community. So I think we need more people like that involved in.
Do you see a lot of people like that out in Jeff City?
No. Oh, excuse me, but no, you don't. You don't see a lot of people like that anywhere.
He was too busy kind of sighing.
You know, he's still got to have friends when he go back. So,
You know, I know that you've done things like facilitate a community garden, which is probably more important than a lot of people realize. Mm-hmm. Those little things that just make it feel like a home. And you've also done things with helping people figure out how they can maybe get assistance getting a cell phone or other things that just helps with daily necessities of living. What kind of other work in that area have you been doing?
Well, I don't know if it's known, but we feed the homeless shelters once a month. We go in and we mentor and feed them. And also, that's on a monthly basis. Also, once a year, Representative Ellington has a basketball group that he puts together, a community group. And out of that money, out of the funds that we have or receive, the canned goods or whatever, we have been able to feed over 25,000 people. So we not only feed, we clothe. We do a lot of stuff that people don't know that we do, and we don't have any outside funds. So none of this money is coming from any entity other than the people. And so that's what makes it so unique, because the people buy back into the system. We have two facilities that we're trying to get up and running for this summer, and that's on our model block project on 38th and Chestnut, where we will be able to take the homeless, we'll be able to take the mothers on welfare, the kids that are not eating, and give them art therapy. So, and that's no cost to the community. It's run by volunteers. So Voices of the People is just that, is Voices of the People. From domestic violence that has ruined in our community, because one out of three of the women that are domestic violence in the urban core will not survive it, mentally, physically, or emotionally.
One out of three?
One out of three, and mostly the ones will die. Because by the time a minority is reported, she's dead. Because that's something that we don't report in our community. It's called, and we're calling it breaking the silence.
There must be some silence, because that's just a shocking number to me, and a very frightening number to me.
If you look at just recently in the news, the three women that were attacked this week, what was the result of their outcome? You know, nobody's really talking about the things, because a lot of these things are underreported, and they're not reported in the urban core. It's not reported like it is outside, because it's expected to happen and it's kept secret, you know, because all the things that happen, child molestation, abuse, physical, mentally, sexually, is rampant. And if we don't talk about it, and we're breaking the silence, and this is why it's so important that we get the word out, and that's why I fight so hard on Facebook, because if you look at the schools, it's a result of the home. The parenting. The two children that were molested at Truce Elementary School, their mothers were told that they could not even get the names of the man that was that molested their children. And it was okay, and they left. This is the lack of information of knowing your rights. And this is our children that are molested in our schools, raped in our schools. Southwest with the rapes that occurred over there. Nobody's talking about this. Because they don't know their rights. And so this is why we fight so hard, to let them know that this abuse is taking place in our community. And it has to stop. It has to at least have a face on it. And that's why we ask people to help us to get the word out about GYRL. And not just the domestic violence part of it, but how we try to restore our homes. You know, because how do you restore a home when everybody in there has been broken? You know, everybody is in there suffering some kind of way. You know, the mother has been taken through and abused. The husband has been abused and violated. So what chance do you have for our community?
Well, that was actually one of my next questions. Is it a struggle to keep people committed to the community instead of just leaving when they get the chance? Just leaving this place that they're struggling in, instead of staying there like you're doing and really trying to come together and bring the community to a better place.
That's why we start with the conscious building aspect of it, because the minute you start to understand the differences between institutions, what resources the institutions should be bringing to you, you have a different understanding of where you want to live, the type of social and economic opportunities that you can have in your own community, as opposed to moving to a community that is not germane with your culture, where you're from, and you have to start over. So the more that we raise the consciousness, and culture is different than ethnicity and different than race, so the more we raise the consciousness, the more you see the retention level of people not only involved with the groups, but people in the community, because they understand the value of the resources that are around them and how to access those.
You know, I think that's one of the things when we talk about being social conscious. I think that's one of the reasons why I get so upset when we talk about what events that happen on the plaza. Because the events that happen on the plaza, they pin minority kids against not being there. But if you look in the community, especially where we're at on 38th and Chestnut, the nearest facility for the children to play is like 5 miles away. So that means your child has no opportunity to ride a bike because there's no sidewalks, you know.
Well, I just wanted to comment on the plaza thing. I lived on the plaza when that whole thing went down, and the idea that they were pinning that on minority youth was ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. There wasn't a problem with kids down there. They were so mean to kids down there. The security would just throw them out the first chance they got. I mean, anybody that looked like they were under 40 was basically stopped and given trouble, and especially if they were a minority. I mean,
watched that the other day. When we have the St. Patrick Day parade, we're looking at a whole group of young people now under 40 that come together because they want to come together. They don't have the racial tension that their parents might have had. And I think the truth be told, a lot of that was because the black guys was flirting with the white girls from Johnson County, and they were coming in and they were doing, you know, getting drunk and doing a lot of that stuff. So we have to, the parents were the cupid of that. You know, children will be children. But just to say that we're going to take our city funds and protect the plaza when you have a whole east side that can't get patrol cars over there. You know, but during that period of night, if it's warm, all our patrol is going to go west.
And I will say, too, that even when there were so-called riots down on the plaza, and I had my car down there and all of that stuff, those riots came and went, and I was right there, didn't even know it was happening. But Thanksgiving night, property damage, it's terrible. And this is a well-sanctioned party, and that they just destroyed the place.
Yeah.
So the narrative there is someone who lived down there, it didn't really add up.
Well, it's because he wants to keep racism alive. And the people have to know what it is, you know, calling for what it is. Racism makes a lot of money. Kansas City, Missouri was the last state to be freed. And it still is. We have corporate, you know, racism now. It's blunted. But I don't see the same results from the kids under 40 as their parents. So they want to make them enemies. But when we talk about the kids on the east side, and the reason why they always talk about the east side is because none of the amenities is over there. We don't have skating rinks. We don't have art shows, you know, art places to go or develop culture. They have no way to go and dance. You know, it's nothing east of Truce. And so if you want your kid to grow up, children are a product of their environment. What they see is what they get and what they hope to be. I was very blessed. I'm Brandon's mother, in order for him to grow up to want something different. But Brandon grew up with a conscious heart of community, and that's where it started. It didn't just start that he grew up one day and he wanted to feed the community. He fed the community and sacrificed when he was a child, you know, where he would give up his toys and he would do this. So we have to raise our children to be what we want them to be.
And he's now in turn bringing his children and showing them what it means to speak out. And that's a really positive cycle for a kid to grow
up. He's passing that baton down to his children to let them see the sacrifices that they're privileged. And when I mean privileged, to be loved by your parent and have a whole parent in the urban core is a privilege. To have a father present in your life is a privilege. You know, is a God. It should not be a privilege. It should be every child's right to have their parents to be there to love them. But in our society today, it's a privilege. You know, it's a blessing. And other men are following him. So it's not just him. He has other friends that are following his footsteps now. Some that thought that they could not be the perfect father, which whatever a perfect father is, but they're there for their children. So we're seeing a turnabout in that course. When you say, Brandon?
Well, as you're kind of seeing all of these changes happen and finding new areas that maybe people need a little assistance here and there, are you just kind of developing new programs to help the community as you go along? Just when you hear people say we have a need, look at it and address it, or do you have kind of?
I don't think we started any new programs because this is what we've been grounded on. I think it just comes around because we don't change because society's changing. The moral value of a home is the same. So the makeup of what we believed in from the very beginning, from the core, is still there. And I think this is why we've been very successful and been able to people to believe in us, because we don't change because the times have changed. You know, we're trying to not bring back, but we're just trying to reestablish the values in which we know that we have as a people.
And where do you see the Kansas City community as a whole heading right now? Is there a good outcome on the horizon?
I started to say something, but I'm not going to be down. I'm not going to be optimistic. But I think if people don't start getting involved, I think that they might as well say that Hitler exists. I think that if people don't start paying attention, they're gonna correct their own riots, which we have seen in Ferguson, Missouri. They're gonna pit that when you take education out of a school, you start slavery. So we're just going back to the very beginning of where we come from. You know, now we know a little bit more, but we know nothing. You know, so if we don't, as a people, start getting involved in our local government, we're just headed towards just a new plantation. Just like they built downtown in the River Keys, they put the new prison system down there that most people don't even know is there, you know, that they have a prison built downtown.
Is this one of those private prisons?
Yes. And it came from, where is it? Which one is it?
No, it was a department change. It went from a halfway house to, I believe, like a level one or a level two. It's not a private prison. It's a state-run facility. The only thing that it did was switch out the probation and parole aspect of it.
But people don't even know it's
there. They didn't create no new penitentiary.
But people don't know it's downtown. It's down in the bottoms.
And did they switch that because there was a need for more prison space? Because that is typically a red flag. When they're filling up prisons, that's a red flag.
Well, no, because it's not a prison like Chillicothe or JCCC. Or anything like that. What they did is they have level one and level two offenders in there, and they removed the halfway house. So it's the exact same facility. They just switched the type of offenders that are in that facility.
But I think, Brandon, what we're saying is when they brought it downtown instead of putting business down there.
It was already downtown. So that's the thing. No. It would be different if it was something new that was being put down there. So you took out one set of offenders, which was offenders that just got out of the correctional institution. And you're allowing offenders that are currently in the correctional institutions to go down there now. Offenders that are currently in the correctional institution to go down there now. So it's not a new build. It's not bringing in different folks that wasn't already having access to it. It's just a difference in the process or where they're at in serving their time.
How come we didn't know it was there?
You did. You just mentioned it.
No, I just found out it was there. I didn't know it was there.
That wouldn't be a city issue. That would be a DOC, Department of Corrections issue. Departments, like the Department of Corrections, since it's a DOC facility, they can switch in and out. And I don't think they're required to give any type of public awareness because it's not nothing new coming into the community. It'd be different if it was something new coming into the community.
Well, but that is an example of how challenging it can be to be involved in your community at times, because they have this facility on the books for X number of years. They just assume that you're going to know about it, even though they never talked to you about it at any point that you can remember in your lifetime, but you're supposed to know that it's there somehow.
Well, no, it depends. So if we was talking about a standard neighborhood, because we're talking about the West Bottoms and we're talking about communities, right? So if we're talking about a regular neighborhood, you can't change a duplex that is created for a halfway house without getting community buy-in. You couldn't change a facility in the middle of a community to be a business without getting the corresponding buy-in from the community. So when we talk about it, we have to be transparent about what we're talking about. If it was in the middle of a neighborhood, everybody would have been identified.
I don't know if that's actually true. That would be the politically correct way. But what I just heard at one of the forums today, that they're trying to pass this ordinance so that they able to come in and tear down houses because they want to. You know, that's saying a whole lot. So they didn't ask for public opinion on that.
tearing down houses that are
in the third district.
Again, it's being transparent and understanding the words and the conversation that's out there. So the ordinance, the potential ordinance that she's talking about would be a city ordinance. So it wouldn't give contractors the ability to come down and tear down a family-owned house. It would give them the ability to tear down a house that has been a burden on the city. Now, I'm not saying I agree with the ordinance. I'm just saying that wordage and understanding.
That's not what he was stating. What he stated today is any house. This is what Jermaine Reed stated, that any house that they wanted to tear down that was vacant and abandoned, and that they could do it without having to.
Okay, and regardless of what Councilman Reed said, this is why it's important to understand the law, because the law and people's opinions or people's misinterpretations of language and ordinances isn't always true. So if the law dictates that you can't have eminent domain where you just tear down people's houses to tear down people's houses, you aren't going to see a influx of houses getting torn down at random will, because that's illegal.
Well, and I think that might be a subject that you cover in some of these classes that you do. So if you want to tell everybody one more time where they can find out more about this.
Yeah, the second Tuesday of every month, we're doing free legal classes right now at the Mary Kelly Center, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. During the summer, we'll start back up with the political classes. But right now, the second Tuesday of every month, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., the Mary Kelly Center.
Well, thank you, Representative Ellington and Missy, for coming in to talk with us about Voices of the People. And I hope to hear another positive progress report here in the upcoming months.
Thank you.
Because they in the hallway.
You have been listening to Radioactive Magazine, a locally produced broadcast spotlighting social and political activists in our community. If you'd like more information or like to comment on this program, call Bill Claus at 816-994-7869.